Everybody, we'll call this meeting of the House Resources Committee to order. Let the record reflect that the time is now 1:09 PM, Wednesday, February 9, 2022. Producing a quorum, we have with us today Representative McKay, Representative Cronk, myself, Representative Putka, Representative Rauscher, Representative Hannon, Representative Gillum, and Representative Shragi. I'm sure Representative Fields and Hopkins will be joining us momentarily, because we haven't had but 5 minutes for lunch. So I'd like to say thank you to our recording secretary, Sophia, and our LIO moderator, Leo. Members could please silence their cell phones and set them up on a notepad so we don't hear it vibrate through the table. On today's agenda, we have House Bill 287, which is the Oil and Gas Tax Credit Fund Appropriation, carried by Rep. Rauscher to my right. The plan is to hear his introduction and presentation of the bill. We'll move into invited testimony by a few folks and field questions as we go, and then we'll also move into public testimony on the bill. Today, that's the only thing that we're doing, not taking up any other piece of legislation, so single subject. With that, Representative Rauscher, if you can move over to the hot seat and begin your presentation. We'll also have, I believe, your staff member, Ryan McKee, on the line to assist in any of the presentation. Representative Rauscher.
Thank you, Chairman Puckduck. I appreciate it, and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Representative George Rauscher, District 9, which is Delta, Glen Allen, Valdez, Whittier, Palmer Fishhook areas. House Bill 287 is an act making an appropriation for oil and gas tax credits and providing for an effective date. House Bill 287 provides for the $60 million that are still owed for the tax credits, the oil tax credits, that were overlooked in the 2022 state budget. A promise made should be a promise kept. A statute written should be a statute followed. There was an oversight for legislators in 2021 that while trying to decide the proper funding mechanism for the oil and tax oil tax credit amount of $60 million, resulting in the amount owed to certain companies in the oil industry, never got paid. HB 287 provides a right for those wrongs, and it pays it from the undesignated general funds. Hundreds and millions of dollars are still owed certain companies here in Alaska their portion of these oil tax credits, and the state has an agreement to repay them by making our installments each year from the budget. As we move the state forward, we must protect our credit rating and put confidence back in our investors by paying our business partners what we owe them by law. Last year, we were $60 million short of that requirement, and by rights, we are behind in our payments. HB 287 will reverse that by paying the overdue note, and I will now turn this over to my Chief of Staff, Ryan McKee, who is online and will give you a sectional analysis and provide any names for those who are invited testimony.
Thank you, Representative Rauscher. Mr. McKee, please put your name on the record and begin your introduction.
All right. Thanks. For the record, my name is Ryan McKee, staff to Representative George Rauscher, and I want to thank the committee for hearing HB 287 today. Today I'll be going over the fiscal note and then introducing our invited testimony. Section 1, this section appropriates $60 million from the general fund to the Oil and Gas Tax Credit Fund, AS 43.55.028. Section 2, this section specifies that the appropriation made in Section 1 is for capitalization of a fund and does not lapse. And finally, Section 3, this section provides that this act would take effect immediately under AS 01.10.070C. So those are that's basically what the bill does. We also have on the line for our invited testimony, President and CEO of the Alaska Oil and Gas Association, Kara Moriarty.
Thank you, Mr. McKee. Anything further, Representative Rocher?
Pardon?
Is there anything further in your presentation and introduction?
No, that is it. And we appreciate for you hearing the bill. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Representative Rocher. Before we move into invited testimony, are there any questions from the committee members? Representative Crowell?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think I have a question for Kara. It's like, paying back these tax credits, what can you share some of the success stories that will come from this or have come from this?
Thank you, Representative Kronk. I think after we hear the invited testimony from Kara and Connor Bell, then we can address those specific questions. Any other questions for the bill sponsor? Representative Hannon?
Thank you, through the chair. I'm wondering if there is a Ledge Legal memo about the lapsing fund or if Ledge Legal is part of the invited testimony or Department of Law, because the mechanism of creating the fund is, you know, on line 7, the fund does not lapse. And as many of us realized in the last year, we've spent a lot of time talking about funds lapsing, not lapsing, sweeping, not sweeping, and I just want to understand that construction legally and.
Thank you, Representative Hannon. Representative Rocher?
Through the chair, Representative Rocher, to Representative Hannon. If we could, I think there is somebody here that can answer that question. Is that correct? Do we have somebody from the department?
We have the tax division director online, Colleen Glover, and Connor Bell from Legislative Finance. If any of you can address the question, or Mr. Bell, if you're going to include that in your presentation under invited testimony, that'd be helpful.
We could do that if you'd like.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Hannon. Any other questions for the bill sponsor? Seeing none, let's pivot over into invited testimony. Representative Rocher, who would you like to have brought to the table first?
Sure. I'd like to introduce Kara Moriarty from the AOGA, and she's here to be invited testimony to give the more of the facts and more of the history on this.
Thank you, Representative Rocher. Ms. Moriarty, if you can please come to the table, put your name on the record, and begin your presentation.
Chairman Pocatek, members of the committee, good afternoon. For the record, my name is Kara Moriarty. I'm the president and CEO of the Alaska Oil and Gas Association, commonly referred to as AOGA. AOGA is the professional trade association for the oil and gas industry here, representing most of the companies exploring, producing, refining, and transporting in our state. As we advocate for the long-term viability of our industry, one of our organization's main priorities is to maintain fiscal stability and consistency, which includes a long-term solution for the payment of the roughly $600 million plus in outstanding liability for the refundable tax credit program, or cashable credits as they're sometimes called. The program has ended, but payments certainly remain. The legislature created the oil and gas tax credit program over a decade ago to incentivize and encourage small producers to explore and come to Alaska. To be eligible for these credits, companies had to have less than 50,000 barrels per day of production. So companies like ExxonMobil, ConocoPhillips, and back then when the program was created, BP, were never eligible, nor did they ever receive any of these cashable credits, nor would they receive any of the suggested $60 million appropriation in the bill before you today. Originally, the credits were not cashable, but the legislature allowed for direct cash payments after the program started, and the program worked. Numerous small companies came to Alaska, and other existing small companies and refineries invested money in exploration projects, production enhancements, and refinery upgrades and expansions. In addition, the state also benefited because to approve the credits, companies had to provide proprietary data that they would not normally provide to the state to make sure that the credit could be approved. So the state received information they would have never had otherwise, and the state has already gained and benefited by getting that information. But companies have yet to be fully paid. As the credit program was no longer feasible, given the state's fiscal position several years ago, all of these cashable credits, which were investment-based production tax credits for both the North Slope and Cook Inlet, were completely phased out with the passage of House Bill 247 in 2016 and House Bill 111 in 2017. The gas storage facility and refinery credits have also now sunset. So this means the state no longer offers refundable or cashable oil and gas tax credits. And while there are other entities around the state that also hold these credit certificates waiting for payment, such as the Interior Gas Utility, almost half of AOGA's membership is impacted by this outstanding liability. These include one in-state refinery, PetroStar, which is a wholly owned subsidiary of Arctic Slope Regional Corporation, explorers like Repsol, which has a 49% stake in the PICA project, and small producers like Bluecrest Energy, Eni, Fury Hex, and Glacier Oil and Gas. They all earn these credits by investing in Alaska to explore and hopefully develop our resources under the letter of the law. The question today is not whether the state should have offered this oil and gas tax credit program like they have done for other industries or not. The question today with House Bill 287 is should the state pay the minimum statutory payment as outlined in AS 43-55-028 for the credits they have already earned. Statewide, the good news is hundreds of millions of barrels of oil, along with trillions of cubic feet of natural gas, sit in the ground waiting to be developed by many of the very same companies that were influenced to invest here by the state's credit programs. Even strictly Alaska-focused companies rely on owners and investors from all over the world. And while prices are higher today than they were certainly a year ago, the industry is not fully recovered from the pandemic. In fact, our industry has 30% less workers in Alaska than we did in September 2019, the highest percentage of any industry in the state. For many reasons, including the state's reputation as a trusted business partner, competition for capital has never been greater, and payment for the pending cashable credits is a key consideration for some companies evaluating their current and future investments in the state compared with other investment opportunities elsewhere. In an attempt to resolve this outstanding debt that's been there for a while, back in 2018, the legislature passed House Bill 331, a subject to appropriation bond program as a solution to pay down the outstanding debt. However, this program was found unconstitutional by the Alaska Supreme Court in September of 2020. Given the state was waiting for the Supreme Court to decide the fate of the bonding program, there was zero funding for these credits. Not even the minimum statutory payments were made in fiscal year 20 and fiscal year 21. In FY22, as Representative Rauscher mentioned, the legislature funded a portion of the minimum payment for that year. And this bill would fund the remaining portion for the fiscal year that we are obviously currently in. In positive news, the governor has included the minimum statutory payment in his proposed budget for FY23, which of course you as the legislature will vote on sometime later this session. So we recognize as AOGA the structural fiscal challenges the state of Alaska is facing. Thus, we are not advocating for a full immediate payout of the entire $600 million plus for the credits, nor are we advocating for the program to return. Nor do we support any notion to tax others in order to cover this tab. We do support the state funding the minimum statutory payment and this bill would true up this fiscal year to the statutory minimum amount. Providing funding for this statutory minimum payment is very important, as it would send a message to investors, producing companies, explorers, refineries, and financial institutions that Alaska has a stable, an attractive business environment and is a trusted partner. So I thank you for the opportunity to be back live and in person and in the hot seat to testify today. It's good to be back, and for your consideration on your bill, and most importantly for all of your service to our state. Thank you, and I'm happy to answer any questions as you see fit, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Ms. Moriarty, for your presentation. I think first I'll apologize. I goofed the order up with Mr. Bell from Legislative Finance and you, but I think what we'll do is we'll pivot over to Mr. Bell for the kind of technical presentation. I wanted to make sure we had Legislative Finance here, seeing as it's a rare opportunity that this body gets to work an appropriations bill to understand the technicalities of the bill. Mr. Bell, please put your name on the record and begin your presentation.
For the record, this is Connor Bell, Fiscal Analyst with Legislative Finance Division. So I'm basically going to speak briefly to the, sorry, are you hearing any feedback?
I hear no feedback.
Okay, great. So I'm going to speak briefly to the history of the appropriation.
Maybe it's the second mic. I hear it now. There we are.
Thank you. To the history of
the Finance Committee you're used to, huh? Well, fancy microphones up there. Go ahead.
All right. So as far as the history of the appropriation, as Ms. Moriarty spoke to, the ability to cash out these credits phased out in 2016 and 2017, and large producers are ineligible. However, those large producers, the credits are transferable. So in the situation that a smaller producer is holding on to these cashable tax credits, they're unable to use them in their own production tax payments, they can basically sell those to a major producer who can then apply those against the tax liability. So basically, the Department of Revenue estimates that there will be $587 million remaining in cashable tax credits at the end of fiscal year 22. That could change depending on if major producers essentially, if they have a large tax liability and they decide it is worthwhile to basically purchase credits from smaller producers that they can use against their own tax liability. And so as far as the appropriation that's made, historically what we've appropriated 10 to 15% of the amount of production taxes levied. The way the Department of Revenue interprets that is the production tax calculation before factoring in credits. So it's basically an amount larger than looking at the total production tax revenue forecasted and dividing by 10. The 10 to 15%, it's 10% when oil prices are forecasted to be above $60 per barrel. It's 15% when oil prices are forecasted to be below $60 per barrel. And typically, it doesn't specify in statute, but typically the DOR spring forecast has been used. We've also, instead of basing the appropriation on the actual revenue, say, seen in fiscal year 22, we base it on the spring projection in the Department of Revenue's forecast. And there's some ambiguity in the statute as to how to interpret both of those things and whether basically there's ambiguity as to whether the appropriation should be made on the gross before taking out credits or it should be made after credits, but we use the interpretation that the Department of Revenue applies, and that's what we are speaking to here, this $114 million. And that is the $114 million, 54, the Department of Revenue spring forecast, basically based on their forecasted oil price and production, their forecast of production tax credits was $114 million. Originally in the budget, there was the FY22 budget, there was $114 million, $60 million of that coming from the CBR. Since the CBR vote was not achieved, the $54 million from the general fund was distributed into the oil and gas tax credit fund. The $60 million is not appropriated. So this bill basically would make up that $60 million that to get to that $114 million forecasted in Department of Revenue spring forecast. And speaking to Ms. Hannon's earlier question about the suitability of funds, I don't foresee that being an issue here, since basically these appropriations will be made to the Oil and Gas Tax Credit Fund and would be appropriate or would be basically distributed to companies before the end of the fiscal year. And so unless something unexpected would happen, the funds would all be expended. The money would be appropriated to the Oil and Gas Tax Credit Fund, and that would all be distributed to producers and companies. So by the end of the year, the balance would be zero again, so there would be no sweep occurring.
Thank you, Mr. Bell. You finished with your introduction and overview of legislative finance points of view in regards to this bill?
Yes, I believe I've covered everything I can think of, so happy to answer any questions.
Okay, we'll transition into questions, but if I could set the table here, Mr. Representative Rauscher, if you could join us up here in case we have questions from the bill sponsor. Ms. Moriarty, if you can join Mr. Bell at the table in case we have questions for industry in general, and then Mr. Bell, if you can stay there in case we have questions for the ledge finance aspect of it. And I also note that we have Ms. Colleen Glover online, who's with the Tax Division, Department of Revenue, for any of those questions. With that, I'll allow Representative Hannon to follow up, since that was the question that Mr. Bell addressed.
Thank you, through the chair. Mr. Bell, so I'm just trying to understand the mechanics, because if this, as opposed to just a supplemental appropriation bill, if we just had a straight appropriation of $60 million, I'm pretty sure I could follow that. It goes to the fund. Your description, we need that fund, the Oil and Tax Credit Fund, has to be capitalized annually for any tax credits to be paid out?
Through the chair, Representative Hannon, I'm not sure if it has to be. Historically, it has. And they have, there's a basically a complicated set of factors that determines who gets paid out first. And since there are plenty of people, plenty of firms waiting for that money, there would be no issue in distributing that money before the end of the fiscal year.
Follow-up, Representative Hannon.
So is this an unusual way to do an appropriation? I'm just, maybe this is more than for the sponsor. For us, the language about it capitalizing and not lapsing is what's drawing my attention. I have no dispute nor debate over the, we owe some tax credits and they need to be paid, but the mechanism of it. And I'm wondering if this, and I know that we can't pass a bill that binds a future legislature, but in essence we're passing a bill that establishes a one-time appropriation, but it speaks about it not lapsing. And so that's where I'm getting a little tied up in my brain.
Yeah.
Representative Roche.
Yeah, to the chair. Representative. We can find that out for you. This is a hearing today, and I will have all that information for the committee. And I'm going to actually talk to the bill writer, because we go through Ledge Legal, and they craft it the way they feel it needs to be crafted. And I will find out exactly for you what the why the language there is in that line, if that's okay with you. If you can wait for that, I appreciate
Absolutely.
It very much.
Thank you.
Looking forward to the follow-up, Representative Rauscher. No other questions, Representative Hannon? Thank you. We'll pivot over to Representative Kronk during the introduction. I know you had gotten in the queue.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And this is for Ms. Moriarty. Can you just share some of the success stories from the tax credit? Thank you.
Sure. Representative Kronk, through the chair. Kara Moriarty, for the record.
Is the mic on?
Is this on? It's not on.
You might have to, or Leo?
Is it on? Is it on now?
Yep, there it
okay.
is.
Okay. Representative Kronk, through the chair. Thank you for the question. It is fun to talk about the success stories. There are many. I think you're actually going to hear from some of those companies later on, so I don't want to steal their thunder. But I do want to mention, there are companies that came to Alaska that were eligible for the credits, like Hillcorp, for example. Hillcorp was eligible for the credits because their production at the time was under 50,000 barrels a day when they were solely in Cook Inlet. and they were successful, and then they went and purchased some assets on the North Slope before they purchased Prudhoe Bay. And once they purchased those assets, they no longer qualified for cashable credits any longer. So to me, that stands out as one of our main success stories, but I think you're going to hear a couple other examples today. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Moriarty. You. Representative Crown, follow-up? All right. Next in the queue, Representative Schrage.
Nope. My only question was about the lapsing fund language, so I think we'll get some follow-up on that later, it sounds like.
All right. Appreciate that, Representative Schrage. Representative Fields.
Thanks. Through the chair, as I recall, we voted to appropriate funds. We didn't have enough votes for supermajority to appropriate these from CBR. Is that right? Is that why this bill is before us today?
Through the chair, Representative Fields, that is correct, that the $54 million from the general fund was appropriated. $54 million was appropriated from the general fund. $60 million would have been appropriated from the constitutional budget reserve, but there was no draw from the constitutional budget reserve.
Follow-up, Representative Fields.
I know that Representative Wohl has another bill to backfill other programs that were swept, which relates to the same failure to achieve a supermajority. But could you contextualize this bill vis-a-vis Representative Wohl's bill, which addresses a bunch of other funds? Because I feel like we're trying to clean up messes that go across agencies and across programs, and I just want to sort of understand this bill in that context, since it all stems from the same source of failing to achieve supermajority votes. Thank you.
Through the chair, Representative Fields, I can't speak to Representative Wohl's bill offhand, but I can look into that and get back to the committee.
Cool. I guess then, closing, Mr. Chairman, it's frustrating to be here. I voted to fund these. I think every year the administration has tried to leverage our votes on the budget as a way of achieving an overdraw of the permanent fund, for which they don't have the votes. And when we go down this path of breaking things, when there aren't the votes for an overdraw, then here we are. And it's very frustrating for industry. It's frustrating for the Higher Education Fund. It's frustrating for a bunch of other programs. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Fields. Any other questions for the folks before us in regards to this bill? Representative Rauscher.
Through the chair, to Ms. Moriarty, it's my understanding that a lot of the those that had credits come into them had to sell their interest for pennies on a dollar, and some of those companies don't even exist now for a lot of reasons, and so these are part of it. And I was just wondering if you could speak to that, whether there's any truth to it, and how that is, how that works.
Representative Rauscher, through the chair, it sounds like you're asking the opposite of Representative Cronk's question. There were some companies that have left Alaska that qualified for these credits and generated a lot of credits. Kalis Energy comes to mind specifically. They ended up selling the one asset that they did have that was producing Ugric to Eni. And then they used to be a major landowner or leaseholder, and they're no longer here. In part because they were not getting paid on a consistent and regular basis. There have been other companies that are still here that have either sold their credits for much less value, similar to what my colleague here at the table described, or they had to refinance their loans for a much higher interest rate. So everybody had to do something a little bit different. And I think you'll also hear maybe during public testimony today some examples of contractors that were also impacted when companies didn't have the ability to pay their bills. So, there's unfortunately we had some good stories, but there have been some challenging stories as well.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Representative Cronk. Representative Rauscher, sorry, any follow-up?
No, I'm good.
Thank you. Representative Hannon?
Thank you, through the chair. Ms. Moriarty, you phrased it away, part of that answer that I want to – I understand if someone went bankrupt, then they're not going – but I think Representative Rauscher asked a question of those who have gone away, and, you know, and we sometimes talk in euphemisms. Does the company – to get the tax credits that they're owed, do they still have to be having business in Alaska, or is it a – even if they're no longer – they didn't sell their credits and they didn't go bankrupt, but they're no longer here, they still get the tax credit restored to the business, or is there something that requires them to be actively currently in Alaska in business to receive it?
Representative Hannon, through the chair, that might be a good question for Ms. Glover from the Division of Tax, just to make sure I'm accurate. My understanding is a lot of those companies that are no longer here sold their assets to somebody else who now holds that tax credit certificate. So if they sold their interest in that lease, that credit certificate transferred to somebody else who's actually, there's an example sitting right behind me that you'll hear from, I think, during public testimony that he could speak to that.
And just so I can rephrase it.
Follow up, Representative Hannon.
Because I don't always have industry speak. So the credit is with the lease, and if you no longer hold the lease, you can no longer get the credit. So it's the same as if you sold the asset off in some other way, the building.
Yeah, again, okay. Representative Hannon through the chair, potentially, but again, that might be something that Director Glover could clarify, because there could be an example that I'm just not aware of. So I'm just speaking to the examples I'm aware of.
Thank you.
Director Glover, if you can, if you care to clarify on Representative Hannon's question, please do.
Good afternoon, committee. This is Colleen Glover, Tax Division Director for Department of Revenue. Can you hear me okay?
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. Just to kind of talk about the tax credit, there's tax credit, and then there's this cash provision that was limited, as kind of talked by a few different folks, to small producers or explorers. They are transferable to other entities, and those entities don't have to be a major oil producer. They can be transferred to any oil and gas production tax payer who has a tax liability. So they can be sold and used by another oil and gas production tax payer. As far as the tax credit, there are some limitations when they are when a company changes or leases change. If the company sells, a lot of it is based on tax ID and how the company is structured. So it kind of depends on what the business transaction is. If a company goes out of business and sells things, sometimes those credits go with the new company. There's a lot of factors into play. You can't it's not just one, you know, situational. And so there are some instances that interest in leases can be sold to somebody else, and those tax credits don't go with that lease interest. The entity can transfer the tax credit to the new lessee, but the new lessee doesn't qualify for cash. So it's not kind of a one-size-fits-all. It kind of just depends. But the question about whether you have to be a business in Alaska, if you're still a business, you know, say you got tax credit and you were doing business in Alaska and you've left, but if you still qualify for the cash, you're still entitled to it.
Thank you, Ms. Glover. Representative Hannon.
Thank you. Through the chair. Ms. Glover, do you have a breakdown of how much we owe in the cashable credits versus tax credits?
Representative Hannon, through the chair. In fact, there was by law, we have to issue an annual report of who got cash disbursements. So we issued our report yesterday. I don't know if it's gotten to all of you all or not, but it is available on our website and was sent to Speaker of the House. You can see who received the $54 million that we dispersed late last year, and you can see the balance remaining as of the end of last year, and it's $565 million.
Thank you, Ms. Glover. Representative Hannon.
So $565 million, through the chair, Ms. Glover, $565 million is in cash credits that we owe. versus the tax credit?
Representative Hannon, through the chair, they are tax credits that are eligible for cash.
Okay.
One thing to note that this $565 million number is dynamic, as was discussed. If somebody wants to transfer or sell their tax credits, they can do that at any point in time and then kind of withdraw their application for cash. So the number does change if somebody, or they can also, the taxpayer certificate holder can use it against their own tax liability. So the balance is dynamic, and it can vary. And I did want to just make a statement about the oil and gas fund, if that is okay.
Please, Ms. Glover.
So the money that goes into the oil and gas tax credit fund remains in this fund. Sometimes there are small balances, and then the fund can earn interest that can be used for disbursement. It's challenging. Well, if you can look at the report we just sent, it's really difficult to do a distribution that equals exactly $50 million to the penny when you're dispersing to 20-plus people and try not to have something to, you know, 20 decimals. And a lot of times we'll, you know, round up if there's enough money or round down. So you'll see the actual disbursement was $54,197,896 because there were some other monies in the fund.
Follow up again, Representative Hannah.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So, Ms. Glover, is the Oil and Gas Tax Credit Fund a fund that has ever been subject to a sweep? If it's been zero, then there was nothing to sweep from it. But especially since we're talking about legislation, I want to make sure we're constructed in a way to achieve what our goal is. So is it subject or has it ever been subject to a sweep? And if not, does the phrasing in here of just it does not lapse suffice to keep it from being a sweepable fund?
Representative Hannah, chair, I am not a budget expert in any means. I don't know if OMB is available. All I know is from my history for the past 5 years that it hasn't been swept in our statute. I mean, the Oil and Gas Tax Credit Fund is within the tax statute, and it is appropriated into the fund, and it's only used to disperse money on these tax credits, and it can earn money as well. But I am not an expert to talk about sweeping and lapsing language.
Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Glover. Mr. Bell, if you'd like to add.
Thank you, Chair Pakatak. So the clarification from Director Glover was helpful. I was unaware of the small balances that may be carrying forward over years. I am not certain if the Oil and Gas Tax Credit Fund is sweepable or not, but I will look that up and get that back to the committee as soon as possible.
Thank you for that. Representative Fields.
Thanks. Just want to say I appreciate that line of questions from Representative Hannon. And yeah, I mean, my interest is both fulfilling an obligation, but also looking forward to prevent these kind of cascading problems from the lack of a sweep, because I think given the past 3 years we may be facing such challenges in the future, and I don't want these programs to face such uncertainty and instability, not just oil and gas tax credits, but higher education funds and the rest. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Fields. Any other questions or comments from members before we move into public testimony? Seeing none, Ms. Moriarty.
Mr. Chairman, thank you for allowing me the liberty to just add one more comment and thought. And thank you, Ms. Glover, for clarifying the question that Representative Hannon asked on, you know, could these credits be going to companies no longer in Alaska? And the answer, I guess, is yes. But I think it's also important to remember that even if a company is no longer in Alaska, they had to spend money in Alaska first to qualify. And I think for those that might not remember, that's how the credit program worked. They had to spend money here first and then apply for the credit and then get paid the credit. So it just hit me while we were having that conversation would be a good reminder for the committee.
Thank you, Ms. Moriarty. Any other questions or comments from committee members?
Actually, could I ask one more?
Representative Fields.
Just following up on that point, maybe Ms. Glover could give us legislators a very clear way of communicating this to constituents. So, you know, is it accurate to say that when we're paying out these tax credits, it is following, you know, resource development or exploration activity here in Alaska only, and we're not just, you know, sort of randomly paying the Bank of America or whatever other bank, which I think sometimes is the popular misconception. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Fields. Ms. Glover, if you'd like to address that.
So Representative Fields, through the chair, for the record, this is Colleen Glover, Tax Division Director. I think a good point to give your constituents is point them to our website, and you can look at the oil and gas production report, and it's public. They can see the entities that received money last year and every year for the last 5 years when there's a statutory change for us to publish this. So you can look at the names of the companies and see it's a lot of, you know, Alaskan companies, Doy Unlimited, the Bluecrest Energy, Arctic Slope Regional Corp. I'm looking at the letter that was transmitted yesterday. It is local companies primarily, but what I can attest to who we give the money to because they qualify because they did invest money and then they were eligible for this tax credit. What I can't attest to is what these companies do with the money once they get it. I mean, I think you might hear from other entities how they have loans against it. So they could be assigned to a financial institution because they borrowed against these credits. But it's still, in that case, it's still an obligation that these companies owe the money. So, but I would imagine if you're going to hear from industry, those are kind of more specific questions to ask them. But I think pointing your constituents to your website and, you know, you can read the names of the companies and how much money they've gotten.
Thanks. You gave the key phrase, the payment follows the investment. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Ms. Glover and Representative Fields. Representative Henn.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I just want to clarify in case my words or my questions were misinterpreted. I wasn't asserting that we shouldn't be paying tax credits owed if a company was no longer in Alaska. I heard it said they were no longer with us, and it was sort of like they've died or they've gone away. And then I went, well, wait a minute, companies – yeah, you can go out of business, but if you, and I just didn't know if there was a requirement that they still had to be doing business in Alaska. You know, I assume that it's going to be very narrow, that someone's held on to their tax credit and is no longer in Alaska, and they're just waiting for the debt that we owe them, but we owe them a debt. So I'm not at all. I was just trying to make sure I understood what we were doing.
Thank you, Representative Hannon. Representative McKay?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I sense that the committee is generally supportive of this bill, and I appreciate that very much. I thought maybe I should just say a couple things to put a little personal face on this whole thing. In my previous career, I retired from ConocoPhillips in 2015, and my first project after that was for Otna Corporation, the native corporation that basically controls the area around Glen Allen. We drilled a exploratory gas well near Tulsana. George and Mike might know where that is. It's right on the road to Glen Allen on the left side, and that well cost about $25 million. And it was a dry hole, unfortunately. So, you know, that you can kind of see the risk that's involved with drilling oil and gas wells, even up here. Typical drilling operation employs upwards of 120 people, maybe more. And that's just like myself, fed my family and paid my mortgage and, you know, bought my kid new hockey skates and baseball bats, you know. And then my next job was Bluecrest. I think I worked for them about 2.5 years. We drilled several wells, from the beach at Anchor Point. And those oil and gas wells are still producing, and that oil's being sold and refined in Alaska. And, of course, the natural gas is helping to heat our homes in the Anchorage area. So, you know, you asked about success stories. There's a couple, you know, that where this this program really helped me, helped a lot of my friends, helped put a lot of people to work. I know the guys that worked at Anchor Point, they loved it because they didn't have to go to the slope. So I just thought I'd add those comments to kind of personalize this a little bit. And I know the program was maybe a little bit controversial, and it's no longer in place, but I really appreciate the support of the committee, and I think we should pay these credits because we do need to attract investment up here. And in my conversations with smaller companies that would like to do business in Alaska, this is, you know, it's in their top one, two, or three issues that they would like to have resolved so that they can have confidence to come up here and invest and drill more wells. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you for the insight, Representative McKay. And for the record, nothing's wrong with the North Slope. Any other questions or comments from committee members? Seeing or hearing none, any other comments from the bill sponsor or any of the folks on the panel to answer questions? Representative Rauscher.
I appreciate it. I'd like to just thank our testimony, our invited testimony. I appreciate the questions that everybody had to ask and the information that I'm going to provide you, and I'm looking forward to the public testimony.
Thank you, Representative Rauscher. And for the record, Representative Fields joined us at 1:13, Representative Hopkins at 1:54. Welcome, Representative Hopkins. We'll now move into public testimony on House Bill 287. We're now in public testimony in regards to House Bill 287. I'd like to ask those testifying to please keep their testimony to 2 minutes or so to allow everybody the chance to speak. Begin by putting your name on the record, your affiliation, and then begin with your public testimony. We'll start with the folks who have called in online first and then move over to the folks who are present in the room. With that, we'll begin with Mr. Benjamin Johnson. Please put your name on the record and begin your public testimony.
Yes, Chairman Pataki and members of the committee, I want to thank you for this opportunity to comment on HB 287. I'm Benjamin Johnson, President and CEO of Blue Crest Energy, a Cook Inlet developer in the Cosmopolitan Unit. And today, I just want to encourage you to look forward at the positive benefits if we can begin to honor prior commitments and bring in new investment to the state. Now, I personally grew up in Kenai. I've worked in Alaska's industry and all around the country. In 2012, we formed Blue Crest to invest in Alaska. A major factor of that was Alaska's tax credit program. We joined with some individual investors, and in 2013, we made a discovery of a huge new gas field and oil zones at the Cosmopolitan. But discovering was just the start. Now we have to develop it and produce it. So based on the laws that were in effect at the time, our development budget relied on the state for its share of the investments under the tax credit program. But just as we got started, we had invested over $300 million, and that with the state owing us about $100 million in tax credits at the time, we learned that not only was the law changing to stop the credit program, but the state stopped paying the credits already earned. Our investors continued as much as they could, but we've not been able to raise new investment now for several years. Now, we've just started developing our large oil field, and our huge proved gas field sits completely undeveloped. All of this oil and gas would be used by Alaska residents, none of it exported, and future state royalties alone would likely be over $500 million. We've literally talked with every major investment bank and large private equity group in the world, and what we hear is that they are afraid to invest in Alaska. So if we can at least start honoring the statutory tax credit payments, you know, we're already a couple of years behind, and get that resolved, I think Alaska can have a tremendous future ahead. And making this payment under HB 287 that brings last year's payments up to the statutory minimum will sure be a great start. Thank you for the opportunity to talk.
Thank you, Mr. Johnson. Moving on to the next person. Under public testimony, I believe we've got Mr. Tom Walsh. If you could please put your name on the record and give your public testimony.
Yes, thank you, Chair Pataki. My name is Tom Walsh. I am representing Petro Technical Resources of Alaska, or PRA. PRA is an integrated oil and gas consulting company, and we're celebrating our 25th year of doing business here in Anchorage, Alaska. And we work for pretty much everyone who's involved in the energy industry in the state, from major oil operators to independents, native corporations, local, state, and federal agencies, and utility companies. And I appreciate you taking up this issue today. I greatly appreciate the conversation that I'm hearing, and I appreciate the prior testimony from folks. You've heard a lot of great things. We have a number of clients who have earned these taxable credits in the past, and these credits have major positive impacts for many of our clients. And I think Mr. Johnson stated very well in his experience with Bluecrest how these credits have helped tremendously in discovering and developing new gas and oil opportunities in the Cook Inlet. There are many other examples of that where this has been tremendous positive impact for the state of Alaska. But a lot of these companies and clients of PRAs have been harmed by the delay in receiving these payments. And some have even gone bankrupt, as we've discussed. In that, we have actually lost revenue because some of these companies have not been able to pay our bills for our consulting services. So the trickle down of this has been significant on top of what you're hearing from folks who are directly impacted. As was pointed out by Mr. Johnson and by Sarah Moriarty, the ability to finance projects been impacted. This is clearly the case. We've done due diligence projects for some investors in the state of Alaska, and they're clearly concerned about the fact that the state has not appropriated funds to pay these past credits. And it just damages our credibility. It's time we clean that up. I think this is a very critical piece of business for the state, and I greatly appreciate Representative Roucher putting this bill forward. I appreciate the administration's inclusion of this in the budget, and I greatly appreciate this body for taking it up and hopefully pushing it through to full appropriation in the legislature. A lot of damage.
Thank you, Mr. Walsh. If you can wrap up your comments, please.
Pardon me?
If you can wrap up your comments, please.
Yep. I do appreciate the time to discuss this with you. That concludes my testimony. Thank you for the time.
Thank you, Mr. Walsh. Moving on to the next person in the queue, I believe we've got Ms. Rebecca Logan on the line. If you could please put your name on the line, on the record, and begin your public testimony.
Yes, good afternoon, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Rebecca Logan, and I am the CEO of the Alaska Support Industry Alliance. And we are a 43-year-old trade association, and we represent the members who work for CARES members. They're the ones who provide support to the companies who are doing the exploration and development and production of our resources. I, too, would like to thank you for hearing this bill today, and I'd like to thank the sponsor for bringing it forward. You've heard already from many wonderful people about the impacts of this, the non-payment had on investment, and Tom touched on what the impact was on other companies, and that's really the point I'd like to make today. When the tax credits were first vetoed in 2015, it wasn't just companies who weren't paid, it was a lot of small businesses in Alaska, a lot of our contractors that we represent. They either received a delayed payment, some received a greatly reduced payment, some have received no payment. And that's a tough thing to take when you're a very small contractor. And an effect of that has been that contractors in Alaska have been unwilling to invest in capital that keeps their businesses going and keeps them thriving so that when there is increased activity, they're ready to take that on. And so paying these credits and getting back on a regular payment schedule will do a lot to just increase the confidence in our Alaska businesses who support the industry. So with that, I will end my testimony, and thank you for the opportunity.
Thank you, Ms. Logan. Next person in the queue is Ed Martin, Jr. If you can please put your name on the record and begin your public testimony.
Yes, thank you, Chairman of House Resources and members of this committee. My name is Ed Martin, Jr. I'm a 56-year resident of Alaska, and I worked on the Alaska pipeline when I was 19 years old. on 67 now. The whole purpose of what we now live for in our state is being diminished by the actions of our legislature failing to honor the contracts for which they enter into with anyone. It's a statutory law that you guys created. I suspect that there may be some reasons why you don't want to pay this bill. And because of that, I think you should get over it. I think that you should honor and you shouldn't change anything because of the laws of estoppel do not allow you to do that. Pay the bill, please, because it affects many families within the state. It affects what our whole constitutional mandate of Article 8 demands of our resources, the utilization of them that'll benefit all Alaskans and many across the world maybe. But for the most part, I think these companies came to Alaska to invest, to explore, to take the risk that our founding fathers knew what that was about, including my father who homesteaded back in, before statehood. So I encourage you, House Bill 287, pass it out of committee today, pay the bill, and don't try to go borrow money to pay it. Pay it from the earnings reserve and get it done. I thank you very much for the testimony. Have a good day.
Thank you, Mr. Martin. Leo, can you clarify there's nobody else online for public testimony? Okay. We'll pivot over to the in-person public testimony now. If you have public testimony in regards to HB 287, please come and sit at the table, put your name on the record, and you'll have 2 minutes to provide your public testimony.
Good afternoon. Chairman of the committee, thank you for having me here today. My name is John Hendricks. I am the president and CEO of Fury Operating Alaska. I'm from Homer, Alaska, but I live in Anchorage. I started chairman on the North Slope in 1980 as a new graduate engineer for Schlumberger. So I've worked in six continents in oil and gas, but I am a resident of Alaska. And I want to make this state great again. I mean, we need to do a lot. And this bill is going to go a long way. Thank you much for the long-awaited payments you made in November. Thank you for that. Thank you for this bill. It's a step in the right direction to regain our reputation as a state and trust in our state. And this is going to help not just oil and gas. There's other programs this is also going to help. You got to have a good education system to get in good schools, right? So you got to have everything has to be humming here. State of Alaska not paying tax credits was a major factor. The past owners of my company, and they were forced out by the creditors. And that's who I bought this company from. These are major investors who I still have to deal with today. And they are due the credits. Fury, since 2020, is the only 100% Alaskan family-owned oil and gas company in Alaska. Since we took over, we've been employing Alaskans, and we're up 800% on Alaska hire in less than 2 years. We want to continue this. All of our gas serves Alaskans at prices at the home, not at our wellhead, at the home, comparable to Texas and less than Mississippi. To rebuild this company, we must be able to attract money. I want to do that. I have a good stake in the Cook Inlet, but I have to bring money in. It's very, very difficult. And the state of Alaska's reputation is one that we all bear right now. And it hurts us because tax credits is the big one. Other than that, royalties and overrides that I have to pay is 25% off the top. And as legislators, don't forget royalties. You always talk about taxes. You make a lot of money from royalties. Unjust property tax of 4 times what the IRS enterprise value is on my company. Mario, Lower 48 and outsiders campaigning against the Arctic, our state, and hydrocarbons. We must all remember that 10 to 15% of those taxes that oil and gas companies pay were designated by statute to pay this bill.
When oil was over 60, 10% goes into the fund to pay this. When oil's under 60, 15%. But our problem now is we're working in arrears, so we're having to make all these different allocations. The state went years without paying these designated funds. We operated in good faith. Alaska must continue to honor her obligation and pay the remaining 53% like this bill designates, and for future years. If not, Alaska's reputation will deteriorate investors for years to come. And like I said, it's not just oil and gas that will hurt. I need to raise capital to pay for my future work and to employ Alaskans. I need you to help me build a one-page marketing tool for my company to go to NAEP. NAEP's being held. It's a major thing in Houston right now. I'm not there.
Mr. Hendricks, if you can please wrap up your comments.
If I raise capital, I add jobs, increase royalties and taxes for the state. But first, we must fix our state's reputation and become a trusted sovereign. Urge you to support House Bill 287. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Hendricks. And I believe you're the first one in this legislature to come before us during public testimony in person. So congratulations. Is there anyone else in the room that would like to provide public testimony? Seeing or hearing none, we'll now close public testimony on House Bill 287. Back in our regular meeting, are there any comments or questions from committee members before we roll into close out of today's meeting? Representative Hannon.
Thank you, because I want to just clarify, Mr. Chairman, This bill is a one-year appropriation, right? It's not...
Representative Washer, if you can clarify your intent with this bill.
Representative Hand, through the chair, this is a one-time payment. This can only be paid one time at this with this document that we're going to vote on whenever we do. And I want to add that the clarification on the language that you had asked about, I'll accept any kind of an amendment to clarify any language, but I want to go to the drafters at the Ledge Legal and get it correct, because we don't want to have a problem going forward. Unless the intended list to move it out today, we can do it in the next committee, but I would appreciate the chance to be able to find that information out for you.
Thank you. Absolutely looking forward to follow up on that, Representative Rusher. Any other follow-up, Representative Hannon? Representative Shragi.
Yeah, thank you, Chair Pukatuk. Just wanted to clarify for anyone, any member of the public who is listening, that this is coming from the general fund, not the earnings reserve. Thank you.
Thank you for the clarification, Representative Shragi. Any other questions or comments from committee members? I did get a note that Ms. Glover online wanted to clarify some of the discussion points that we had today. Ms. Glover?
Thank you, Chair. This is Colleen Glover for the Record, Tax Division Director. The question about the lapsing for this fund, you can find that language in 43.55.028F. It says money in the fund, the oil and gas tax credit fund, remaining at the end of a fiscal year does not lapse and remains available for expenditure in successive fiscal years.
Thank you for the clarification on the language regarding the oil and gas tax credit fund. Any other questions from committee members? All right, seeing or hearing, Representative Shragi, sorry.
No worries at all. Jumping in at the end here, through the chair, I just wanted to maybe follow up on Ms. Glover's comments. I think we still need to clarify whether or not the lapse is different from the sweep.
Mm-hmm.
And I just think there's some further discussion that's going to be required there. Thank you.
Nope, absolutely. And I'm looking forward to the follow up from the bill sponsor and working with my office to make sure that we get all of the, action items from today's meeting in regards to sweepability, the Ledge Legal language around the word lapse. And I think we were going to look to try to spread the letter from the tax division that was sent to the Speaker Stutes in regards to the details of the last payment that we made. So we'll work with, like I said, the bill sponsor to make sure that all of that information is made available to committee members so we can exercise due process and make a well-informed decision in regards to our action on House Bill 287. I'd like to thank the bill sponsor for his presentation today, all the folks that helped with some talking points in regards to how it affects industry and what it does to our checkbook as the state. With that, if members have any amendments, I would urge you to work with my office to get those in. I know we have follow-up that needs to be done before maybe we can think about making an amendment to something. But the plan is to pick HB 287 back up on Friday, provided Representative Rausch is able to get the follow-up that we need. Also on Friday, we'll be taking up House Bill 52 and going into public testimony on that. As you may recall, we heard that, I think, on Monday for the first time. With that, the meeting is adjourned at 2:15 p.m. Thank you, everybody.